My guest today is Azalea Snail. We're going to start by playing a track off of her CD and then get in some interview and some live stuff. So stick around. Lots to come. This is Is Good on killradio.org. Back on Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Azalea Snail. How's it going?
Just dandy.
Just dandy.
Yeah. How are you, John?
I'm not unwell. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for coming out to the show. And why don't we just get started off with giving me a sense of of how this project started. Do you see it in terms of, you know, hello, I'm Azalea Snail and this is my music, or is Azalea Snail more of a project or a band?
I guess it was sort of a project because I was playing in sort of a more, not mainstream, but sort of a normal-ish rock band called Open Wide in New York. This is like late 80s. This is how far back we go. And I found that I wasn't particularly happy playing other people's songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the songs were okay, but sometimes, you know, David, the guitar player, would bring in a song and I just wasn't that into it. It's really hard for me to play music that I'm not really into. It's very difficult. I have to be 100% for me. That's how, you know, passionate I am about it. It has to really do something for me.
You could tell in any band too, if like even if it's the bass player or the drummer or something, if you could tell if they don't understand the music that they're being forced to play, then there's not that sense of cohesiveness, you know?
Yeah, I think it can show. It's very difficult. So I just wanted to do what I really loved, and there was a bunch of guys that I was hanging out with in a band called Fly Ashtray in New York, and we all sort of, actually, they're the ones that turned me on to this concept of being able to do music on a four-track, because, you know, I always kind of figured I'd have to save up, go into a real studio. I was actually working a little bit one summer at my friend's recording studio, which was a really fancy studio, 57th Street and Broadway, where, like, you know, Sting did music and some other pretty big names.
Let's feel the ghosts of all these famous people using the equipment.
It was a pretty slick arrangement, but I got some free time in order, you know, I was sort of volunteering as the receptionist, so I got to get free recording time in exchange, which was great, you know. So I had that experience, and but anyway, then I got turned on to this idea that you could just do stuff spontaneously and directly onto this little Tascam Porta One, and it was just an amazing experience. And then there was a show on WFMU radio in New Jersey, and a guy was doing a show called Lo-Fi, this DJ named Bill Berger, and he had it every Friday afternoon. So I just started sending him my little home recorded music, and you know, the following Friday he would play it on his show. So it was really exciting for me.
Describe that a little bit, sort of the first time, you know, that you got that feedback. Somebody
else
heard
amazing.
Your music, and
yeah, it was so gratifying, because you know, it wasn't just doing it for yourself, which was cool, and I would have probably kept doing it, but it was so inspiring to be able to create music, you know, on a Monday or Tuesday, send it in, and then literally that Friday he would play it on his show.
Wow.
And then I started getting gigs, you know, from that, and then I got a record label offer almost immediately. It was really great. It was a great time. It was sort of the beginnings of indie rock.
Mm-hmm.
As we know it, you know.
And did you have a clear idea of what kind of music you wanted to make, or were you kind of winging it until the sound came out the way it sounded right to you?
I think it just came out as a conglomerate of all the influences that I had, you know, from Brian Eno to the Troggs to Blue Oyster Cult, you know, Patti Smith, you know, Lou Reed, T-Rex, all that stuff that I was just crazy about. It was so in me, and that just came out as a sort of hodgepodge of all those elements together. I wasn't conscientiously trying to do anything, and in fact, because I wasn't a very good musician, and probably still am not technically, it just came out in my own style, which I guess makes it, you know, a little bit unique, I suppose, if I can admit to that or say that.
I can imagine pitching to a label, you know, it's T-Rex meets Brian Eno. that's great.
I never had to, you know, that's the great thing too, is that I never really had to pitch it, luckily. I mean, I had this kind of freaky experience where I played my second or third live show ever, and these guys from a little label called Albertine Records were there to see the headlining band called the Reverb. Are we allowed to curse on this show?
Yes.
Reverb Motherfuckers, they were called. and they were kind of planning to sign them, and they saw me, and I guess they, I don't know if they liked it better or they just something about it that affected them, and they asked me if I would do an album with them. And
wow.
I was sort of kind of blown away. And at first I did a single, Another Slave Labor Day, 45, and then a few months after that, followed up with my first album, Snail Bait. So it was a long time ago. This is not, we're talking 1990.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how long I've been around.
And when did you come out to LA? And was that to pursue music?
Not necessarily to pursue music, but to get away from what New York was becoming, which was a little too gentrified for me. I just loved the whole bohemian atmosphere. That's what brought me to New York in the first place. And I lived in the West Village, and it kind of has remained the same there, but I didn't really like what was happening to the city in general.
You know, a lot of it being bought by Disney. And
exactly. You know, Starbucks on every corner and, you know, The Gap replacing, you know, my favorite movie theater on St. Mark's Place. I still, to this day, I know things have to change. And
but it's never a good thing when you can see a Starbucks from the window of a Starbucks.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty scary. Yeah.
That's a good point.
I remember they used to have all these great used CD stores there, too. These sort of mini amoebas all over the village. And then one by one, they just dropped off.
Yeah, I think I was just in New York a few months ago, and I can be happy to say that they're still there. But you just have to really look for them. Mm-hmm. And they are smaller now and on, like, littler side streets. But they're still there. You just kind of have to keep looking. But yeah, I mean, there's still charming elements of New York. But anyway, I came to LA really for more space and kind of just for a more healthy lifestyle. And which for me is, you know, being able to take hikes within the city rather than have to go like, you know, an hour and a half on a train ride to get to a beautiful place.
To be able to climb above the smog is nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you ready to jump into a live song?
Sure.
Why don't you, for our audience sake, describe the unusual instrumentation you brought in here today. It's unusual to me anyway. It's probably not to you.
Yeah. I always played guitar and Casio and things like that when I was making all my albums through the 90s. And then when I came out to Los Angeles, my cousin, I think we were cleaning out his closet, and he took this machine out of a box, and he said, "Do you have any use for this?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. What is it?" You know. And I guess I remember he used to play it when he did poetry readings, and he would just take it and just play like a couple notes on it. It's called an omnichord, and it's sort of like a synthesized auto harp. And I know Brian Eno used them here and there and some other people, but it has become sort of my main instrument now, just because I love how much I can do with it and all the various chords, and it's so ultra portable. So when
it's very small, and I was hearing you sort of test it sonically before the show, and immediately I was impressed with how much sound came out of it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's great. You know, when I go to Europe, because I pretty much tour Europe every year, and it's just great. I just bring my two little omnichords and stick them in the trunk. And I don't even need an amp. They can go direct. And it's just, it's really nice. And I've gone with just the omnichord, a trumpet, and a sax. So everything just fits in the trunk of our little tiny European rent-a-car.
Nice.
And it's great. I like convenience, you know.
What would you like to play for us first?
I think we're going to play, I'm going to
you
play.
You and your omnichord.
Yeah, me and this guy. An old song called Highway Devices. I've sort of been opening my sets a lot with this, and let's try it out.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Azalea Snap.
In this one, you need no
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Azalea Snail. Wow, that was incredible. One of the things that always impresses me in any form of music is paradox. When you have, you know, two sounds or two ideas that you wouldn't normally think go together, and then you hear them at the same time and they complement each other. There's a, not to get too convoluted in this, but there's sort of a, there's a darkness and a dirtiness to your instrumentation and a sweetness to your voice that, you know, you don't normally put together, and yet together they make this really interesting, unique sound. Tell me about that in your mind, sort of creating the Azalea Snail sound. Does that make any sense what I'm getting at there?
Well, it's thank you. I think that's really nice. It just reminds me of that T-Rex line when Mark Bolan says, you dirty, what is it? Dirty, sweet, no mind, girl. I think that's what he said. I could never really understand what he says. Dirty, sweet, is it no mind or dirty, sweet-minded girl? Something like that. So if I can aspire to be like a Mark Bolan phrase, that would be very exciting to me.
And I've heard the opposite. I've heard sort of sweet, pretty music with kind of, you know, dark, pained vocals. You know, so I mean, but this is definitely, you know, there's a certain gothic, almost gothic quality to, at least in that last song, and yet the lyricism was very sensitive and kind of touching. So just tell me about sort of combining these two worlds.
I guess, you know, a lot of my influences are poets like Anne Sexton and filmmakers that I guess combined those elements as well. I mean, Anne Sexton to me was so interesting because she had this completely sexually, this sexual way about her, but also very kind of desperate, you know, which is interesting. But also this incredibly beautiful poetic quality. So, you know, if I can aspire toward that, I mean, it's hard to explain like how things come out, but I think if they don't come out just naturally and from influences that you've had, then sometimes it just sounds a little forced.
So you don't make an effort to make the Azalea Snail sound. That's just how it comes out.
No. Yeah, I don't take a lot of effort. I mean, I feel it. Like, if I don't feel it, then it's hard. Like, for me, that is kind of the hardest thing about playing a lot of shows live, and maybe that's why I don't play that many live shows, especially in Los Angeles, because it just takes so much out of you.
Sure.
Maybe that sounds like a cliche, but it really does take a lot of feeling and to expose yourself that much. I find it excruciating, really. I think it's very difficult, you know. And sort of when you're on tour, it sort of becomes a little bit more, you kind of get used to that, where, okay, you're on tour, you know, you have to play these shows every night or almost every night. But it is still painful, and it's interesting because I think it helps me understand when I see other musicians play, and you know how you just want to go up and talk to people that you like right away, right after a show?
Yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, I know how difficult that is because you've just given all whatever you can, as much as you can, and then people come up and they just want to make, you know, small talk or,
right,
how you doing? You know? And I think it kind of helped me understand why, you know, some of my favorite musicians that I, you know, always, like, I wanted to meet them after a show so badly. And then sometimes I got to do that. But there is a lot of, like, kind of a feeling of almost emptiness after you play. And even in this situation, like, just having played a song and then trying to talk about it.
Sure.
I mean, you just discharged
a lot of energy over the airwaves. And and now I'm dragging more out of you. Well, you know what? Let's listen to another track from your CD so we can all catch our breath. What should we play next?
Let's see. What? How about number? Let's see. One, two. Number. How about? I was going to play that live. How about Seven? Seven is sort of the other pop song, and I just wanted to say I was lucky enough to have a really great director make a video for this. It's called Sylvan Echoes, and I guess it got like one of the picks on YouTube.
You know,
cool. Where they pick. They have a little pick. So it's called Sylvan Echoes, and you can watch it on YouTube. In fact, I have a bunch of videos on YouTube. If you search Azalea Snail, they all pop up.
Cool. We'll have to check that out. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Azalea Snail. We'll be right back.
Gonna let you forget what it is you're meant to. Can you provide?
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Azalea Snail. MySpace.com/AzaleaSnail. Is that the place to go for
That's
most
the
up-to-date
place to
info?
Go for sure.
Okay.
Definitely.
Tell me a little bit about what you like to write about, sort of the lyrical content. What are some themes you find yourself coming back to, even if you don't intend to?
I suppose that feeling of loneliness and despair, it's always there.
I think delay effects help with that too.
Yeah, that's true.
That sense of separating you from your audience, you know, being far away from them.
Mm. That's true. Yeah. I like to feel like I'm in the middle of the Grand Canyon when I play, you know, just like this lots of echo. And I guess, you know, relationships are always good fodder, you know. It always helps to have like a really crappy breakup, but hopefully that won't happen now for a long time. I got married about a year and a half ago.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. I know you got married semi-recently as well.
Yeah, right? This past May.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's really fresh. Yeah. So hopefully that's the end of that department, but you know, you never know.
Well, hopefully something bad will happen to you that will keep your music going.
Yeah, you got to have something for inspiration.
Yeah.
But that's a really good point. Well, you know, I've also done, and in fact, right now I'm working on a lot of instrumentals. I really love doing sort of soundtrack music. And I did actually in the 90s, I scored some independent movies, mostly for this one guy who was making these like kind of sci-fi horror / motorcycle movies. I think I did three soundtracks for him. And I've always loved just creating a soundscape, as I call it. And that's really great for me too. And then you don't have to worry about lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, although I love lyrics and I, you know, like I said, I actually started out as a poet, you know, doing poetry performances in New York. At places like the St. Mark's Poetry Project and, you know, places like that. And
how was the transition for you from spoken word artist to vocalist?
It's so much more comfortable to have a musical instrument to have with you up there. I mean, talk about loneliness. Just having your voice, now that's scary.
And just your words, too.
And just your words, yeah. It's frightening. So having an instrument with you is certainly a nice comfort. It's like having a friend, you know, a little companion with you.
But in terms of your vocal instrument, did that come naturally to you, or was it something you had to sort of develop over time?
Can't you tell that it's not very developed?
No, it sounds lovely.
Thanks. I was always quite lazy about taking lessons, and I probably should have. I probably would be a much stronger singer, but again, I guess I just always kind of love the idea of spontaneity and just sort of not perfecting things, but sort of letting things be as they are. And I also was very influenced by people like Jack Kerouac and Bunuel and a lot of kind of art, you know, filmmakers and writers that just sort of just were themselves. They didn't seem to have to work at it. Like, I doubt Bunuel went to film school.
Right.
I don't believe he did. I read his autobiography and I don't remember him saying that. But sometimes, you know, just creating right from the heart, right from the gut is something about it. And it doesn't always work, but that's just sort of the only way I can do things.
What's your writing process like? I mean, do you sort of knock out a whole bunch of songs and then pare down which ones you're going to work on? Or do you follow each one through to the end? Does it take you a long time to do a song?
It does now. You know, there's definitely something about when you're first starting, that first like 10 or 12 years of creation that is so exciting. I mean, I did an album, at least one album every year in the 90s. You know, I would just crank them out and I was always inspired and I would just get out my four track and just do a bunch of tracks in the four track. And then I'd either have a lot of old poems that I would base these, you know, the lyrics on, or I would just also spontaneously create, just sort of, you know, let it go, let it happen. And now I guess now I'm a little bit more I don't know if it's more, I guess I'm less disciplined. Well, I mean, I used to always, I just always wanted to create, and now, well, you know, I have to say though, now I'm creating more videos and things like that. I've been directing a lot of videos, so I think I'm kind of, I did do some Super 8 films back when I was doing my first recordings, but that was so painstaking. And now with a video camera, it's so easy, you know, to just shoot stuff.
Doing your video work, does that zap some of your musical energy, or do you, or is that the same sort of exercise?
I don't think it's a zap. I think it's just a different kind of creation. It's something else that I love to do. I love merging visuals with sound. I just love it, you know, and so I started directing videos for my own music, and then when I saw a band that I really loved and it affected me in a certain way, and I would just start visualizing in my head making a video for them. And that's actually how I started. I did one for Chase Frank, and that's how I met you. Mm-hmm. Hello, Chase. I think she's listening.
Shout out to Is Good Artist, Chase Frank.
Yeah. So I saw her at Spaceland. I met her through my friends Min May, who I also have done a couple videos for them, fabulous band from Portland, Oregon. So I met Chase through Sean from Min May, and as soon as I saw her play, and I fell in love with this one song called Frontlines, and I just started visualizing in my head what I'd like to do, you know. It has to be also kind of just there. I don't want to have to execute this, you know, fancy, elaborate scheme. I just sort of want it to happen. And a lot of the, you know, the visuals will, I'll know kind of what I want, but then I'll just start shooting. And then it's the editing process where I can get a little more technically creative.
Does your music operate in much the same way, where you sort of just go for the song and see what comes to you, and you have a sense of what you're looking for, and then you find it, and then sort of, you know, knock it down to what it's ultimately going to be?
Yes.
As opposed to going out there and finding a million different things and over-texturizing it.
Yes, especially in my early days, the layers would just happen. I had a whole array of percussion instruments and little keyboards, and I would just find really, bizarre ways of miking weird little, like I had a little tiny, tiny little baby toy drum set, and I would mic it through with like a heavy metal pedal and a chorus or, you know, whatever pedals, and just make this sound. And it's kind of unidentifiable, I think, in a lot of my recordings earlier. And now, I mean, I have gone into real studios, like the last that you have there, Aveca Moore. I recorded that in England with a friend of mine who has a really nice studio with a lot of old analog equipment and a Mellotron, which is really fun to play. So that one took a lot longer because, you know, first of all, I had to go to England. So I went one time, laid down a bunch of tracks, and then I went back about a year later with my trumpet player and sax player and filled in a lot of the tracks with them and then mixed it. So that was kind of a long process. And now also I'm starting to record stuff on my Mac, you know, which is also a completely different process. And
sure.
That's a whole, and I'm sort of just starting to get to know GarageBand and mm-hmm. what you can do with it.
Yeah. Now a lot of production is so accessible to the solo artist that you can really get a full sound without having a full band.
That's right.
It's, I suppose there's upsides and downsides to that. It allows really talented people to do amazing things and not so talented things to do mildly interesting things.
That's true. That's true.
Why don't we do another live song?
Okay.
What would you like to play for us?
I think I'm going to play this new-ish. It's probably not that new by now, but still relatively new song called Silk Breeze.
All right, cool. Whenever you're ready. My guest is Azalea Snail. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Azalea Snail. So, Azalea, let's talk a little bit about performing live, sort of in general and specific terms. The first time you went up there as a solo artist, was that kind of a nerve-wracking experience for you, or did you feel prepared?
It was nerve-wracking, but I had another person with me, Andy Nelson, who played. He had this really cool idea to play this giant kalimba or thumb piano. They're sort of like these little African instruments, mm-hmm. you know. So he had this great big one, and he mic'd it, and it made this thunderous, amazing sound. It was actually super cool. So he played that. I had my guitar. It was scary, but you know, I feel like if you don't have that kind of edge, like when you get up there, then maybe you're not going to, again, feel it as much. There's something about being having that nervous energy, I think, that gives you just more spirit when you play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it becomes very routine and you know, you don't have that kind of nervous feeling, maybe it won't be as exciting for you or for the audience.
Yeah, you can see a lot of bands, it looks like they're just going through the motions, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
What about kinds of venues that you like to play in? Do you prefer playing for a more intimate audience that you can connect with, or do you like a big crowd?
Yeah, see, now this is going to sound really ironic and stubborn, but I actually prefer when there's a lot of people in a bigger place, because I guess for me, like, just connecting with a few people that you see, like, right in front of you is really nerve-wracking. It's, like, too nerve-wracking, you mm-hmm. know? It can happen. I've had good situations like that, but I prefer when, you know, there's a lot of people and 'cause you get energy from people, and, you know, they always say it doesn't matter how many people you got to play your best. And that's true. But there's something about getting energy from a lot of people that is, for me, a lot more rewarding than just getting it from a few people that are really into it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's, you know, part of why you would even want to play live is just to be able to connect with as many people as possible.
What makes for a good live show for you? Do you base it on your performance?
Great groupies.
Or groupies?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Great live show. Well, definitely having good sound, good monitors. You know, this is technical stuff, but it really does make a difference.
Oh, sure.
You really need to hear yourself in order to play a good show. I don't care what anybody says. It's the absolute truth is that. I love also having a good light show. This is going to sound like, oh, silly, but it's true. I mean, I like having good, solid white and blue light. Again, I think when you play in a place where, you know, you're made to feel special, it makes you feel special, and that gives me kind of renewed inspiration. You know, when you're just playing in someone's living room, it's hard. I mean, it really is difficult. And you can do it, and there are situations where that can be really great, but I just prefer, like, the whole pomp and circumstance of playing a show. You know, like the whole, you know.
And part of it is probably the video artist in you as well. Like, you know, you like not just the sound, but you like there to be sort of an image that goes with it.
I think that's true. You know, yeah. I mean, think about, like, the greatest shows. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, for me, the greatest shows I saw as a kid with a band that would put on, like, a great show, you know, like Blue Oyster Cult with, you know, the five guys at the end all coming out and playing guitar, you know, even the drummer. They all came out and played guitar, like, the last song. It was really cool, you know. Yeah, I just like to see the whole, you know, rock show experience. It's exciting, you know.
Cool. Let's listen to another track from this CD. Where can people get this, by the way?
I believe Amoeba still has it, and of course directly from me online if you want to write to me. I guess that's the best way to buy stuff these days, directly from the artist, because then the artist gets everything, and, you know.
Yeah, and it's nice for the artist to know that, you know, there's people out there wanting the music.
Yeah.
Just getting, you know, your royalties with a few numbers on it. It's nice to know there's actual human beings out there.
Yeah, it's great. And also connecting. I do, and, you know, despite what I just said, you know, that the rock show, I don't want people to think, like, you know, that I feel like a rock star, that I am a rock star. But, you know, at the same time, I love getting mail from people. I used to get these great handwritten letters, you know, back before email was mega, mega huge. And I loved it. I loved getting mail and, just getting feedback from people. And I love to this day getting, I still get, fan mail via MySpace. And it's such a great feeling. And I write back to everybody. I would never not write back to people.
I'm going to start sending you messages every day just to test your theory.
Okay. And then, I did get a letter recently from a prisoner or a guy that just got out of prison.
Wow.
And that was a little scary because he was asking me these really weird questions.
Wow.
That was a little, so I may not write him back. Okay?
Yeah.
So.
Write him a song.
I don't know.
Or maybe not. Maybe you don't want to encourage him. What should we listen to next?
Why don't we go for the last song and Disintegration. Or number 10, sorry. Okay. There's actually a bonus track that's the last song, technically. But this track 10, Disintegration, is a song sort of about the collapse of a human being. Somebody that was, I guess I wrote it sort of about someone I knew that was doing a lot of bad things to themselves, not a healthy person. And I'm proud to say that Tanya Hayden plays cello on this. And do you know Tanya Hayden?
Not personally, no.
But she's one of the Hayden triplets. Mm-hmm. And her father is Charlie Hayden. And she's now the wife of Jack Black, which is kind of cool. It's kind of
fun.
Interesting. Anyway, so this is from the latest album, Zeckamore.
Disintegration by Azalea Snail. Stick around. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Azalea Snail, myspace.com/AzaleaSnail. Tell me a little bit about the people that you perform with, and you have an unusual makeup with a trumpet player and a saxophone player and the omnichord. Tell me about putting the team together.
The team. Well, there we go. Already ready for the next song.
And my guest is also Azalea Snail and Azalea Snail.
Yes, lots of us here. Yeah, who needs other musicians when you have like 10 of yourself?
Exactly.
You
know, right?
I guess also I like meeting musicians kind of naturally as well. You know, I've been pretty lucky in that department, sort of through friends or just hanging out. My most recent, it's been a while, but the saxophone and trumpet player that are on this album, Peter Wolf and Brian Castles, we just sort of met when I was out and about. I think I met one of them at Spaceland, one of them at the M Bar. It's just hanging out. And I had a trumpet player who I met in my New York days that I also met just through friends. And I guess I just like everything to sort of be a natural, sort of organic process. You know, I don't like to have to, you know, try too hard for these people to fit in and, you know. But yeah, and I always like the idea of not having, you know, the typical rock band, mm-hmm. you know, guitar, bass, drums, keyboard, whatever. You know, I like to mix it up a little bit. It's just different and better for me personally. And also the portable factor is also really, really tempting for me. I the whole idea of being on a big tour bus and having all these extra people with you, you know, I guess it could work out really well, but I know I've heard a lot of stories about, you know, this people not getting along and, you know, so I guess I just like to keep it simple. But and my most recent drummer / percussion player, Sarah Clothier, she still plays with me, and she's in another band called the Pickup Sticks, who are really great. And so yeah, as long as it comes together in a way that feels right, and you play with like-minded people, then it's a great experience, that collaboration.
Do you prefer being sort of known as a recording artist as opposed to a live performer? Not to say that you dislike performing live, but is there something that resonates with you more about recording, you think?
I guess the idea of just, you know, leaving behind these works as recordings is kind of maybe not more important for me, but maybe a little more important is to, you know, leave behind these works that you created and as you want them to be, you know. And I also was lucky in a way not to ever get that popular where, you know, I had like big producers and managers and agents and people like that breathing down my neck saying you have to do it this way. And, you know, so I always sort of did exactly what I wanted to do.
Is that how you like to keep it in
I
terms
think that
of the future
is how
of this project?
Yeah. I mean, yes. And I wouldn't mind. And I have worked with a couple of producers, but I guess I just sort of have it in my head in such a way that I want it to be. And I just want it to sound like that. But, you know, anything is possible for the future. You know, I can't say that this is the way I want it to be for the rest of my life. You know, I do love collaboration and having people help you, you know, get your music out there and help promote it is also really important, you know.
This album that we were listening to, is this something that you released on your own or is this through a label?
It was through a co-op label called True Classical. And I just did the one album with them. I don't even know if they're going to exist as such anymore. You know, as we were talking about, even with Kill Radio, just having to work as a co-op, it's difficult, you know?
Yeah, a lot of challenges.
Yes, exactly. So I prefer when, you know, a little label will come along and say, we want to put out an album for you. That's definitely preferable.
And are you working on new material now?
Yeah, I'm working on, as I mentioned, some instrumental stuff and kind of some weird, I guess, avant, you know, weird progressive stuff. I don't know. I don't know what category to put it in, but it's definitely more leaning more towards soundscapes and less pop right now. Although I guess Silk Breeze, that song I played, is sort of pretty poppy, and it probably will end up on the next album.
Cool. Well, I look forward to hearing it. What would you like to? Let's do a live song. What would you like to play?
Well, let's end it with. This is a fun song for me to play because it sort of has a disco beat, and it's called "I Praise You."
What's the? So, you brought out a different Omnicord. How is this one different?
It just has more choices, more cool. selections.
All right. Whenever you're ready, my guest is Azalea Snell. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Azalea Snail on Is Good on killradio.org. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Anything's upcoming that we should look forward to? Any performances or releases or video audio projects? Anything going on?
I guess, mostly I just would like to invite people to join MySpace, join me, and also check out the videos on YouTube. I just did one also for a band that I really love called Puppies and Kittens. It's another band you should check out, John. They're really beautiful, wonderful band. And I did one for them called You Took More Than I Did. And it features my kitten, Leo, and another kitten and a puppy. So I wanted to make a video.
All aspiring stars.
All aspiring stars, yeah. And it's a really sweet video. So that's also on YouTube. I'm probably going to play a couple shows in the spring in L.A. and then hopefully go back to Japan in April and back to Europe in May.
Wow. Well, let me know as these things come up so I can announce them on the air, and let me know as you have new tracks coming out so I can play them.
All right.
Thanks so much for joining us on Is Good.
Thanks for having me.
MySpace.com/AzaleaSnail. This episode will be available for download from IsGoodMusic.com and MySpace.com/ThisIsGood sometime later today, so check back over there for that, as well as all the previous episodes of the show and all the upcoming episodes of the show. Should we sign off with one more track from the CD?
Sure. Why don't you play Scenescape, number... I think it's three.
Three, right? Yeah. You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org.